Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. The Johnson Controls name is one of the most iconic brands in Milwaukee today. And their products, high-tech batteries and temperature regulators like thermostats, are leaders in their industries. But there was a time that if things had gone just a little differently, the company could have been just as well known in a different industry.
In fact, employees at Johnson Controls headquarters in Glendale pass a little piece of that history every day as they walk one of the corridors on the campus. Actually, it's kind of a large piece, and that corridor is where we recently met up with the company's archivist, Ken Worth, who describes what we were looking at.
So this is a 1910 Johnson Empress sedan. It's a 7-passenger vehicle, 50 horsepower engine, and Johnson made only about 6 of these in the period from 1909 to 1912. Just to give you a little bit of background, Johnson Controls did manufacture automobiles and trucks.
And that, I think, is going to surprise people.
I think you're right. I think most people, of course, if they think of the name Johnson Controls, they think about our temperature control systems. But in fact, we had a great early history in the first decade of the 20th century, manufacturing automobiles, manufacturing trucks, and specialty vehicles for not only for Milwaukee, but shipped all over the United States. The Empress here was a very special automobile. It was made specifically for the more elite in society. The price tag was $3,000. That might not seem like a lot today, but it's equivalent of about $75,000 in today's dollars. And if we look and take a little bit of closer look at the vehicle, I think that we can see, if we pop the hood, that all of the Johnson vehicles were made with Renault engines. And that's interesting, because you know, you'd usually think that an American-made vehicle would have American-made parts, and in fact all the Johnson vehicles were made with Renault engines and also with a Bosch magneto, an ignition system. So it's interesting to note too that both Renault and Bosch are customers of Johnson Controls today, almost 100 years, if not 100 years later. The vehicle itself was made, as I said, for the more wealthier folks. It had leather-appointed interior. It had wood paneling. This vehicle actually even had a clock, which you wouldn't expect to see in a vehicle from 1910. It had a canvas top to it, so it could be used as a convertible as well. And the one thing that I can do for your folks on the radio, as I get into the car, there's one thing that you can listen to, and that, of course, is the horn.
The other thing that strikes me as I look at this is there are a couple of, in fact, a number of really enormous lamps.
Yes.
That are on this car.
So the brass headlamps were electrically operated, but the more of the spotlight type lamps here were powered by kerosene. So if it was a really dark evening, the headlights would do the trick, but you could also have these additional lights that the driver himself would have to operate. And there was finally what they called a spotlight that was also electrically operated, so that if you were trying to find an address across the street, for example, you would shine this directly on the house or whatever it was that you were looking for. And that, so yes, 5 in total.
Where did this car reside before it was in the hallway here?
Very, very interesting story about that. So this car was acquired by our company in 2004. There was a collector in Calgary, Canada, who through some employees we became aware of it, and our CEO at the time had the foresight to say, you know, we need to preserve this. This is part of Johnson Controls history. Let's buy it. We did. We brought it to Milwaukee. And for the last several years, this vehicle also was in our Holland, Michigan headquarters. Very lovingly preserved and cared for by the employees there. And there was a tulip time parade that it participated in every May. And we saw it running down the streets of Holland, Michigan, and really running quite well at the time. So we brought it over here just about 6 months ago. So we decided that we wanted to display it here at our corporate headquarters. This, by far and away, is probably the most eye-appealing and eye-catching vehicle that we have.
And you were with the company in 2004 when when you came into this car. When you were an archivist and you learned that there is a car of, I don't know, this magnitude, was it an exciting moment for you?
It was absolutely wonderful. You know, we are aware that there might be less than half a dozen Johnson vehicles in existence in the world today. We've got two. There's a collector in Texas who has a third. And we believe there's a fire truck on the East Coast, somewhere in New England, and that would be the fourth one that we're aware of. So to find something like this is absolutely fantastic. And I myself was very excited about that. We have we know that this vehicle prior to its time in Canada was owned by an individual in Oregon. So we can speculate, because it was on the West Coast, Warren Johnson himself, the founder of Johnson Controls, owned one of these 50 horsepower vehicles. My feeling, my gut feeling, is that this could very well have been Johnson's vehicle. He brought it with him to California when he decided to try to expand the automobile business shortly before his death. And it could very well be that it just stayed on the West Coast and it finally wound its way up to Oregon and then finally into Canada, and now it's back home in Milwaukee, so to speak.
And you say there were only five of these Empress cars that were made?
There were six that were made with a 50 horsepower engine. There were other Empresses, but at a lower horsepower. So we know that, and in fact we have the production records that we can prove that shows that Warren Johnson himself purchased a 50 horsepower Empress.
Now, how many cars in total did Johnson end up making while it was still in the automotive business?
Right. Johnson made probably about 1,000 cars in the period from where they really got into car production, 1905 until 1912. So they weren't at a par with Ford or anything else at that time. They didn't have an assembly line. It was all very much handcrafted automobiles. To the fact that there were only maybe 1,000 or a little bit more made, the fact that we're still five or six out there speaks to the quality, durability of these vehicles.
As an archivist, do you have dreams that there is a Johnson car someplace in a barn that's gathering dust?
I'd like to think so. Yeah, I think that we haven't identified obviously the entire universe of antique cars out there. And we would like to do that. We're always interested. I personally am interested in acquiring Johnson Automotive Heritage pamphlets, catalogs. Cars would be wonderful, sure.
We didn't mention something else about this, and that is this is a right-hand drive car.
Correct. Yeah, all of Johnson vehicles were made with right-hand drive at the time. That was just the standard way of doing things. I don't know if it's because of the Renault engine, because of the European engine, or what, but you'll always find that these vehicles were made with right-hand drive.
What was it that led Johnson to get out of the automotive business?
Well, Warren Johnson himself, I should say a little bit about him, company founder, was an inventive genius. His mind was going in every which direction. It wasn't just temperature controls or automobiles. He even dabbled in, as I said, in wireless telegraphy, in tower clocks. And he wanted to expand his business to find businesses that would be counter-cyclical to the temperature control business. Automotive was one of them. Unfortunately, though, the board of directors never embraced that idea of investing as much as needed into the automotive business. So the capital wasn't there. They were always sort of like, as Warren Johnson himself said, we were as much a mariner as a man who wades in the ocean. So they never really got into that automotive business in a way that Johnson would have liked. It may have started changing had he lived a little bit longer. Ford was coming on with his assembly line just about a little bit after the time that Warren Johnson died. And, Johnson maybe at that time would have had the argument to, say, expand this business. But when he died, his successor said, let's stop all of this. Let's stop automotive. Let's stop the wireless telegraphy experiments. Let's stop the tower clocks. We need to concentrate on one business and one business only, and that's temperature control systems. And that's, of course, a business that Johnson Controls came to dominate in the decades after Warren's death.
And in the end, presumably, the automotive business never got to the point where it was an irreparable drain on everything else that Johnson Controls was doing.
Right. Although I think some of the board members probably felt that it was coming pretty close to that, and they needed to either, fish or cut bait at some point in time. Warren, I think, argued at one point to create an own separate company for the automotive business, which, of course, they never did.
Where do you see the importance of what you do as an archivist in the grand scheme of what Johnson Controls does today?
Well, I think it's very important to preserve history. I've always felt that knowing and understanding our past is important and gives us direction for the future. And I think I'm very honored to be able to maintain the company's historical records. And understanding our past, again, gives us direction for the future. So things like this, I think, point to how inventive our company was. The inventive genius of Warren Johnson and Johnson Controls speaks to what we do and what we say about Johnson Controls today in terms of ingenuity, in terms of innovation. And having something so tangible like this available for our employees to see is very important.
Do people stop and check this out?
All the time, yeah, all the time. This is very much something that grabs people's interest. And even if you don't have an interest in history, people who have a mechanical bent are interested in taking a look at it. People will come over, take a look at it. Some people might even go in and, sit in it. We have our little stanchions here, but of course, they're certainly welcome to do so.
Are they really? There must be a certain amount of pride that you get doing what you do when you walk by, paper ephemera aside, having something tangible like this is really pretty remarkable.
It is. I agree. And it's something that, like I said, I do have a lot of pride in the fact that our company was into automotive manufacturing. It's something that I think even the folks in Milwaukee don't realize about Johnson Controls. There's a history there beyond just temperature controls. We were actually making automobiles, and that's something that we should recognize and take some pride in as well.
Well, thank you so much for showing this to us, and best of luck in your work.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Ken Worth is Global Manager of Records and Archives Management at Johnson Controls. We met him in front of a 1910 Johnson Empress sedan, which resides at the company's headquarters in Glendale. You can see pictures of it and learn more about it at WUWM.com.